This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Donald Trump met with Russian leader Vladimir Putin earlier today at the G20 summit in Germany, the first official face-to-face meeting between the two. The highly anticipated encounter comes as questions remain about Russia's involvement in the presidential election. So, what'd they talk about? It's still unclear. But the two have plenty to talk about and apparently are taking their time doing it. Their meeting is lasting much longer than people had expected. As the G20 summit continues, folks are also looking to see how the president and other world leaders will handle mounting tensions around issues like North Korea's recent missile test, climate change. Oh, there's a lot to talk about, and the political junkie Ken Rudin is here to help analyze all of it. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Frank.
So, a meeting today. Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, this is expected to go, you know, 30 to 40 minutes. It's gone over 90 minutes. So in the first place, the surprise is it's longer than we thought.
Well, that is true. It was a little disheartening when we heard White House officials say that there was no real agenda, that President Trump did not know exactly what he was going to talk about when he went in with the meeting with Vladimir Putin. And you have to expect that Putin knew exactly what he wanted to talk about. But it just seems like the obvious, I mean, look, there are things that obviously they want from each other. Trump wants Putin's help with North Korea, with what's going on in Syria, things like that. But as far as addressing the issues that most Americans are talking about, in addition to, you know, what they did in Crimea and Ukraine, but the Russian alleged meddling in the 2016 campaign, there's no indication that Trump will want to talk about that. He still said, as of yesterday, he still said he's not convinced that Russia was part of the meddling in the U.S. election. He said, well, yes, I know the intelligence agencies, our U.S. intelligence agencies said so, but our intelligence agencies also talked about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And in doing that, he kind of did a little sideswipe on President Bush. And then he talked about, well, if the Russian invasion was so, Russian interference was so insidious, why didn't President Obama do anything about that? And they had a little swipe at Obama as well. It's interesting that he goes to Europe to basically do little swipes against two former presidents.
Well, and not having, I mean, for the White House to acknowledge that there's no agendas, I mean, when you have an agenda and you have a staff, then you ask your staff to prepare you on these various topics on which we will speak. So to have no agenda is to suggest there is no preparation. And as you suggest, Vladimir Putin is well prepared, including a psychological dossier on the president of the United States, and certainly talking points and absolute goals, what Putin wants to get out of these discussions.
Exactly. And you don't even need a psychological dossier over Donald Trump. All you have to do is read his tweets. He tweeted this morning from Hamburg attacking Podesta and the DNC and the emails as if we can't, he just can't get past that. And so, you know, you just wonder, well, you don't even know what's going to come out when the two men emerge from the meeting. If Donald Trump has the indication that he gave away a lot, or at least found it very satisfying to him, you wonder what Putin got. And of course, the opposite extreme is also equally frightening. The thought of Donald Trump being impetuous or angry or whatever kind of a negative reaction, which would set back relations with Russia. But the fact is that there's very little that Putin is going to be willing to give, certainly not on Assad and Syria. He's not going to break with that. And we saw that Russia and China both disagree with any kind of punitive messages towards North Korea. So that's not going to happen either.
Yesterday, the president did criticize Russia for its, quote, destabilizing activities during a speech in Poland. So how much weight does that criticism have going into a talk like a conference like this?
Well, I'm not sure, but it is interesting. The conversation he had in Poland was very instructive about, first of all, the fact that he picked Poland rather than Britain, France or Germany, erstwhile U.S. allies, and went to Poland first. Poland is becoming, I mean, it's a U.S. ally, yes, it's a member of NATO, yes, but it's also becoming more authoritarian. There's more of a crackdown on the media, there's more of a crackdown on the courts, there's certainly a hesitation against allowing Muslim immigration into the country, and all three of those seem to mirror what Donald Trump is talking about. So it was interesting that he goes into Poland, and yes, he does attack Russia's involvement in the expansion in Ukraine, and of course that plays very well in Poland because we all know about the relationship between the Soviet Union and Poland in the 1930s and 1940s. But as far as what he said in Poland and what he said about, you know, his Russian expansionism, I suspect that those words would not be repeated in today's meeting.
Well, also it's fascinating because for all of the tough talk about Crimea and Russian involvement in Syria, we also have the president on his last visit to Europe talking softly about NATO, criticizing NATO, and suggesting perhaps that U.S. support is not full. This at a time when there's great international concern about Russian designs on the Baltics, NATO allies.
He did say, unlike the last visit to Europe, he did say that he endorsed the NATO and its ability to protect its members. But he's still, and I don't know, Merkel still has this problem with him, that Trump is still on the opposite side of the view, opposite side of the fence on economics. I mean, it's obviously when Western Europe and Japan put together this big trade deal, excluding the U.S., obviously it's Merkel and Macron and all the leaders of West, and May and leaders of Western Europe realize that Trump's view of economics and his protectionism is not the way of the future, at least it's not the way of Western Europe. So when he attacks NATO members for not paying their fair share, and of course he pointed out Poland has paid its fair share in NATO membership, he just seems so unwilling to say anything really critical about Putin and shows no hesitation about saying anything about Merkel, May, or Macron or the U.S. allies in Western Europe.
All right. What about, we know that there might be disagreement with Russia over North Korea and China. What about the rest of the G20 and what can we expect in talks about North Korea with the president on that subject?
Well, I honestly don't know. I mean, the options are very limited. It was very interesting that that North Korea decided to fire off that intercontinental ballistic missile on the 4th of July. I don't think that was a coincidence. And, of course, President Trump could talk all he wants about, well, there's going to be some pretty severe consequences for North Korea and, you know, something we're going to have to take more seriously. But what can he do? He bet most of his money on China interceding, and China seems obviously unwilling or unable to hold back Kim. And nobody's is talking about a first strike, obviously, although some of the hawks in the Trump administration hint about that. But I think the options are limited. We talk about sanctions, but North Korea has have sanctions for years, and they keep, you know, developing and overdeveloping weapons. And now Russia and China talking about, well, maybe we can demilitarize North Korea if the U.S. and South Korea will stop military exercises together. But to eliminate the U.S. presence in that part of the world, it just seems like against everything Washington stands for. So I really think that Trump and the U.S.'s options are completely limited.
Maybe we could settle this with a wrestling match. Let's talk about the president's tweet earlier this week.
No,
a video of Donald Trump, this is a long time ago video, wrestling a man digitally doctored to represent CNN. And he didn't make it, but he tweeted it out, Ken.
Yeah, he tweeted it out. As a matter of fact, the guy he was wrestling years ago was Vince McMahon, this big wrestling executive whose wife just happens to be the head of the Small Business Association in the Trump administration. But, you know, his supporters say, oh, you can't take a joke. But once again, it shows him, well, I don't know what else to describe it, but violence against the media. And to talk, you know, he actually talked in Poland yesterday. He talked about the fake news of CNN and how he made so much money for NBC with The Apprentice, but they don't like him. He's just obsessed with the media coverage. And of course, he got a very a friendly ear in Poland because the Polish president says the same thing about his country's media. But, you know, when you're talking about hurting, you know, wrestling and body slamming somebody with the cover of CNN over his face. That's exactly what the Montana Republican candidate for Congress did with a reporter from The Guardian. So it's just some people say, oh, it's the president having fun, but it still frightens a lot of people who watching the president's disdain and just complete disgust with a free media just seems to creep up thoughts of authoritarian responses, and that's not particularly good for the First Amendment.
No, particularly when we see more and more violence in our schools against immigrants and people saying this is Trump country when they pull a gun, when they beat a student. You know, this is giving permission to some degree, and it can't be denied that seeing this kind of behavior is some of the permissiveness that we see that is acted out in violence toward vulnerable populations in the United States.
That's exactly true, and not that the media deserves any special privileges. I mean, I saw that Chris Matthews the other day made a joke about Mussolini ordering the assassination of his son-in-law. And I don't know if that was supposed to be a reference to Jared Kushner, but I thought that was pretty disgraceful as well. But the point is that members of the media are getting more death threats, more threats online and on phone calls and visits to home than ever before.
Only left you about 30, 35 seconds here. Dozens of states say they will not or could not offer voter data to the Trump administration, its investigation to investigate its interest in investigating voter fraud. Tell us more about this response from about 44 states, right?
Look, yeah, it's 44 states, but some of these states have given some information to the government. Basically, Trump created this Presidential Advisory Commission on Electoral Integrity because he believes that it was widespread fraud that caused him the popular vote against Hillary Clinton. So who does he pick to head this thing up? One of the people is the Kansas Secretary of State, Kris Kobach, who's known for being not only an opponent of voter fraud, but has done basically everything he can to restrict voting by people he doesn't like. So it just seems like it's one of those distractions Donald Trump loves to prove his point that he really was the lawfully, or at least the numerically elected leader of the free world.
All right, political junkie Ken Rudin, we're out of time. Thanks so much. Good to talk with you, Ken.
Thanks, Frank.
This is The State of Things. We are talking about all things that matter to the state of North Carolina. You can find links to Ken's work at our website, stateofthings.org. And you're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.